Welcome, welcome, welcome. I know, that's my John Oliver voice. This podcast is called Courage to Rise. The mission of this podcast is to discuss working from home and what makes all people excel in the tech workspace. These conversations are broad and fun, like your current life. Even with high-spirited music, maybe the music might change from episode to episode. So we will just be talking about what makes you tick, what is important to you, and, of course, where you want to go. There are moments when conversations are lighthearted. Maybe we will banter, and some will be genuinely open and serious. So join us on this journey. Be curious. Yeah, Nora, I was going to go ahead and record the session. I'm not sure if it's recording or not. Yeah, it is. Okay, cool. Yeah, normally announces to both of us, it's like, hey, this session's in recording.
Yeah, we said that as soon as I came on. It came on.
Oh, did it? Okay, I thought that was the AIs, because I had my otter and your otter came on, and I figured they're recording everything.
Right. No, I think, okay, well, I don't know. As long as it's recording, that's on your end, that's the main thing.
Well, I think the best way to start here is just kind of... I've got a mini announcement, you know, when this goes and publishes. It just says, hey, what I'm all about with my coaching, which is, empowering women in the tech force, in the office, but definitely work from home. But would love to, you know, hear about what you're working on right now. I mean, you and I have talked so many times on different things, and I just want to get caught up. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I think since we touched base over the Christmas period, but I think since we originally spoke, there's been a lot that's happened for me. I think I left my job. I think that was a little less than a year ago to focus full time on the business, mm-hmm. on my business. And I've really kind of, I suppose, been spending a lot of time getting my name out there, building my brand, letting people know who Rebecca Heald is, and really focusing the work that I do in the construction industry. Yeah. And I think that kind of happened, I suppose, organically. In that originally my business was set up to look at sustainability through leadership within different sectors. When I first set out, you know what it's like when you first set up a business, you're like, oh, it's what I'm doing is appropriate to anybody, so, you know, I can work with anybody. And then you get into it and you're like, right, okay, really, I should be niching down a little bit. I should be kind of, you know, refining what it is, you know, what my skills are and really focusing. And it just kind of happened that I ended up attracting lots of clients within the construction industry. And at that point, I was working in construction, and I was working in the automotive industry, and I was also working in manufacturing. They were the main clients that I had. So they were all male dominated with similar challenges, I guess. But then as I kind of delved more into the construction industry, I started to realize how all of my experience and skills that I'd built up over the last couple of decades in my previous career could really benefit the industry and the clients I was working with, because some of the challenges that they face around equality, around diversity, not enough women in the industry, not enough inclusion. I'd say not enough neurodiversity, but that's not true. There is a lot of neurodiversity in the industry, but there's just not a lot of inclusion to encourage and really unlock that talent. And then, of course, it's the industry that's having the biggest impact on our climate. And so it seemed to make sense to start to work there. And, it, you know, I really, like I say, over the last year since leaving my job and deciding, you know, to focus on this full time, it's been a case of getting myself out there, doing lots of talks, you know, getting new clients and really getting people to understand what it is that I do. But I would say now is the time that I am really refining my craft. Is that what you want to call it? And trying to, because I think I get really passionate about a lot of things, and I'm very good at just talking about what I feel passionate about, and maybe not, and that's because of my ADHD, I think. I'm not so good at kind of going, right, this is what I do, this is what I can offer, these are the successes I've had with businesses. So I need to get better at that at the minute, David.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, I've got two thoughts here, listening to you. Number one, and I think they both go together, if that makes sense, that, you know, sometimes our clients or our students teach us what they want to know, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Like, you think you have total ideas, like, this is what I want to do, this is my expertise, and then they rise up, it's like, but this is what I need.
Yeah.
And so you have that conversation. And I think that leads into maybe another question. I think you kind of talked around, you know, what areas of construction, you know, it seems like a general term. So I was just trying to see if specific, I think of construction like building buildings,
mm-hmm.
but you mentioned automotive. So, you know, so there's ideas there.
In terms of, the automotive was, I just had some clients in the automotive industry alongside clients in construction, whereas now it's exclusively in construction. I mean, construction is a huge industry, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there are so many different careers within that, skills, trades. I would say I work a lot with architects, with planning consultancies, and, you know, that's kind of where, and I think a lot of that is because, you know, from the minute, if we're talking about sustainability, then we need to be thinking about sustainability, you know, from day dot, right? We need to not be, it shouldn't be an add-on. It shouldn't be something that we're just thinking about once we get on site. It should be something that we're thinking about when we are conceptualizing a building, a space. And so I just, that's I suppose that's why I've kind of honed in on working quite closely with architects. And also as well, I think, you know, it's really, really, there needs to be a mindset shift within the industry. And it's, I've always been a real big advocate of, you know, small change can lead to big change. But I think we are at a point now with the climate, you know, with where we are with the planet, that just doing things the same way but green isn't going to work anymore, right? We need to be really driving forward and really radicalizing things, I think. And that's really hard. That's really hard to kind of, that's a hard message to get across, because people don't like change. You know, and the construction industry in particular is known for being resistant to change.
Right.
And I think, you know, and here's me coming along saying, like, we need to make big change. But the thing about big change is that it's a collective. It's people coming together. So what I'm trying to do is just bring people together. There are so many people with lots of ideas, and we're learning all of the time.
Right, right.
But a lot of it's happening in silos. And I was reading something recently, and it was like, you know, no one person is going to save the planet, but a community will. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's kind of the way that I look at it. Obviously, I work with clients individually. I look at what they can do within their organizations, but then it's about how can we all come together? You know, I'm wanting this year to really build on a sustainability network. I know there are lots of things that are happening out there already, which is great, but I really feel like we need to come together, and we all need to understand what it means, you know? What does sustainability mean? Because it doesn't just mean doing things greener, you know? It doesn't just mean reducing our carbon footprint. It doesn't just mean, you know, it's all the things that lead to that. So the social injustices, you know, that kind of are contributing to all of that, I think need to be really, you know, changed, looked at, and we need people to come together to do that. And when you look at any, sorry, I know I'm going on, but when you look at any, when you look at any, you know, major change that has happened, you know, a government level legislation, you know, on a worldwide perspective, let's say, it's happened because of a small group kind of gathering up momentum somewhere, right? So yeah, I really feel that we need to be bringing all of these pockets of things, pockets of people together, and really, you know, shedding a light on it so that we can achieve that radical change that we all seem to be so fearful of. Yeah, well, we're not, you know, we're not, we know it needs to happen, but we almost feel like it's someone else's responsibility.
Well, I like that you're taking, I'm not sure if you want to use that term, a big picture view.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you hit on a key word there, carbon footprint. In the old days, I called old days 2 years ago, you know, there was an index. It's like, where are you on the scale? You're 10, you're really bad. One, you're really good. And if you're zero, that's preferred. But the world keeps changing. The needs keep changing, and that index is not sustainable by itself. So at the end of the day, it's like, you know, how is the company going to grow and continue to be accountable?
It's interesting because, well, this is again where we've got to look at sustainability. We live in a world where we are still putting profit before planet.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. And, you know, and I'm here to try and, I see myself, I've always felt that there's a purpose, that there's a reason that I'm here and I'm doing what I'm doing, right? And I'm not unique, you know? There are lots of people like me wanting to achieve what I want to achieve. But there are also a lot of people, we've all got our individual strengths, okay? I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent there because I want to come back to what you're saying.
Tangents are good.
Yeah. But I want to come back to what you're saying about carbon footprint, because we do all have a carbon footprint, and you can go on a website, you can go on the WWF website, you can figure out what your carbon footprint is. You will see that if you're living in the Western world, your carbon footprint is going to be a lot higher than if you're in a, I was reading something the other day and it said, why are we calling them developing countries? You know, or underdeveloped countries, whatever you want to call them, we should be calling them exploited. We should be calling them exploited countries, you know. And I think my point here is that, you know, you go to those countries and their footprint's going to be somewhat lower than what it is in the Western world because of what we've got at our fingertips. Yet there are a lot of countries that are not contributing as much, yet are seeing the effects of it more.
Right.
And, you know, and we need to be talking about that. We need to be making people see that. And because to whose benefit is that? The other thing is, and I did a post about this on my social media, about how carbon footprint was made popular by BP, right? British Petroleum, who are one of the biggest, you know, massive fossil fuel company. Right, one of right. the, I think the, There's 20 main companies across the world that are contributing to carbon emissions, and they're number six, right? And so you're thinking, why is it that this massive, you know, organization is trying to individualize this problem that we've got? Who's it benefiting? All it's doing is, well, we are, and this again is not exclusive to construction. This is happening across, you know, all sorts, across all sectors. What's happening here is that, you know, the big players, I'm trying to think of the best words to use, are trying to individualize the problem so that we're the ones that feel guilty, so that we're the ones that have to make the choice over, oh, whether we bike to school or to work, sorry. you can tell I've done the school run not long ago.
And what do you say we, the consumer, clients, or?
Us as individuals, just us as human beings, okay. As individuals. We've become very conscious of our choices and our carbon footprints, right? And that's distracting from the ones that are continuing as normal, you know, to extract fossil fuels, to pump chemicals into the atmosphere. And I think that this is a problem that's widespread across so many different things, because I also see this within businesses that are talking about well-being. Okay, so what we tend to do, what an organization will do, rather than looking at the structures and the systems and the leadership, they will look at how they can individualize the problem. So instead of us taking responsibility, we're going to put a workshop on for you. We're going to offer you, you know, extra days leave. We're going to offer you some counseling so that you can work on this problem, and we're not going to take responsibility for it. It's the same within the NHS in the UK. You know, we're going to put the responsibility onto you. You need to, somebody was telling me the other day, she went to her doctor and her cholesterol was high. I said, what was it, your LDL? Was it your HDL? Do you know? Was it your good cholesterol? She was like, I don't know. All I know is that this particular marker at this point said that my cholesterol was high, and I was sent a sheet with a diet to follow. I'm like, are you being serious? You know, again, right, it's right. Like, right, we're going to push all of these problems onto the individual. We're going to have a person who comes in who is obese. Hate the word obese, because I totally do not agree with BMI, but we'll use it, you know, for the purposes of a common language, let's say. Although this is reopening up something else, because I feel like this common language is damaging and is creating really toxic narratives. But anyway, it will be right, you know, you need to go on a diet, you need to do this, you need to do that. We're not going to work with you. We're not going to look at the system that is failing you. We're going to push the problem on you. Sorry, I've gone on a real tangent, but
I totally agree, because, you know, I look at the pharma industry.
Yeah.
They keep coming out with, you know, great medications that, you know, make our life healthier. But, you know, I'll go on a personal rant just to say, I'm not a big fan, just because the side effects are normally worse than the cure, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, if you live healthy, you may still have type 1 diabetes. You know, it may be hereditary and you got to deal with that. Thyroid, you can go down the list of, you know, what's going on there. But if you just find yourself and maybe eat correctly, it's kind of, food is medicine, medicine is food. But you know, pharma's got so many chemicals out there. Now we're trying to figure out, you know, what's in our drinking water.
Well, come on, who's benefiting from this? Who's profiting from this? There's so much money.
This is a rant.
it's you know, Shell, BP. So it's going down the, you know.
Yeah, it's big money. It's just like petroleum.
It's like, exactly. And it's like, you know, when I first decided to come out of education, because I was in education for almost 20 years, worked as a secondary school teacher and then worked in inclusion and diversity.
Right.
So hence why I'm really passionate about, you know, equality and, you know, and what have you.
Well, when you have hands on the subject, that's easy to talk about.
Well, yeah. But I guess what I was trying to kind of come on to before I forget, because honestly, I'm like, I'm 44 now, almost 44, 44 in 3 months. So I'm very quickly going to forget what I was trying to say. Brain fog. But no, when I started throwing my ADHD as well, it's really hard for me to remember what I'm trying to say. Anyway, I first set up my business, when I decided I wanted to get out of education and set up a business, and, you know, knew I was here for something more, didn't know what it was that I was here for, but knew it was something. And I thought, I know, I'm going to go and I'm going to study nutrition, and I'm going to help people with their well-being and what have you. So I did a nutrition qualification, and at the point I couldn't go back, and I mean, I'm grateful I didn't, but at that point, me being all or nothing, I was like, right, I want to go back to university and I want to, you know, get a degree in nutrition and or dietetics. But I couldn't, because you had to be in lab, you know, you literally had to do it full time. One, I couldn't do it because I was, you know, bringing up my family, and two, I couldn't leave my kids. So I thought, right, I'm going to go. So I did a really fantastic qualification. Took me a year. I got a first. But the reason I chose the one I chose was because it was very independent. It was evidence-based. It was, you know, it looked at studies from all sorts of different sources from across the world. Whereas if I'd have done a dietetics degree in a British university,
right,
I would have been, you know, studies would have been cherry picked. I would have been brainwashed. Sorry to say, you know, and I'm talking about some of my controversial things here, but there are so many studies out there, you know, relating to, you know, well, breakfast being the best meal of the day. Well, of course, because that was sponsored by Kellogg's. Do you know what I mean? So there is, I'm just trying to say, there's so much corruption and there's so much oppression right in front of our faces. And these are the reasons that we can't, we're not achieving equality. These are the reasons that we are fighting for sustainability. These are the reasons that the planet is dying in front of us. You know, it's a much bigger agenda, yet we still feel like the pressure is on us as individuals. And it, you know, and yes, we all have a part to play, but we all have to come together collectively.
That makes sense. Question popped to my mind here is, so you got the next generation growing up in your house.
Yes.
What is their perception on mom's views and the world views? Is mom crazy? Is the world crazy? They got it all figured out. They got
they're teenage. Well, one of them's a teenager. One of them isn't yet. I mean, my youngest is figured out that the education system is a bit archaic. Let's say he'll call the mom, why am I learning about these things at school? That this isn't going to teach me how to set up a bank. He's 11, you know, and some of these things I'm learning, I can Google and I can find them out, you know. And but anyway, let's not go down that route. My kids, I think you know, we talk a lot. We it's really, really hard, right? Because I feel like all I can do for my kids is lead by example. If I try and ram things down their throat, they're just going, oh, here she goes again. I have had it. They have come home and said things to me before, like, oh, my teacher says this, my teacher said that. And I'm like, well, what do you think? And they're like, well, I've heard you talk about it, Mom. And I'm not sure that that's true, you know? And I'm like, well, there you go, darling, you know? But it is tricky, you know. I had a situation recently, you know, where apparently my youngest son had been unkind to another girl, and then it all kind of blew up, and it was like, you know, you had a conversation with him around, you know, how you treat girls and women and stuff like that. But then he turned around and he said to me one day, he's seen some comments on some of my they're my biggest fans, right? So
yeah.
By the way, I do think that the school kind of didn't deal with it in the way that they should have, but. And they're the ones that will literally, they'll see all the misogynistic comments that I get on my TikTok posts, and they're always standing up for me. I'm super proud of them. Where they're still too, I'm still, you know, they don't talk enough with me about, we do have some conversations. But like we had one recently actually, and we were talking about, I was trying to get my youngest son to read Rebel Ideas by Matthew Syed. I don't know if you've read it. Yeah. Just to try and get him, you know, thinking outside the box and you know, thinking about diversity and how diversity of thinking and thought is really important. Realised it was probably a bit too heavy for an 11-year-old. But we got talking, because they do talk a lot about equality and gender and stuff, but mm-hmm. we were talking about it, and my youngest son turned around and said to us, yeah, but you can't escape the fact, Mom, that girls that boys will always be better at football than girls. And before I even said a thing, my eldest son jumped in and went, yeah, but why do you think that, you know, that we think that way, Leo? Because boys are given more opportunities to play football at school, so they have more time to, you know what I mean? So it was like, it was great to hear that conversation between, like, at the time they were only 10 and 13.
They should be on this podcast.
Yeah, no, seriously.
I think the three of us or four of us will just have a ton of fun. It's like, what do you
think?
Yeah,
they love, but they're boys, and they absolutely love, you know, winding their mum up. You know, they'll come up and they'll come home and they'll say some things just to wind me up, you know? And then it's funny though, because I also had the other week, a couple of months ago, I had a moment. I've always tried to be really strong for my kids, right? And you know, I remember, like, when I left their dad, I used to see a lot of my friends and a lot of single parents who would use their kids as crutches, and I was like, I'm never going to do that. And but I did end up having a bit of a meltdown in front of one of my kids. They're just crying, just like, oh, what am I doing? And I'm just crap and blah, 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 blah. And my eldest turned around and he gave me a big hug and he just went, Mum, how can you say that? He was like, look at everything. He said, you have gone and left a job and set up a business all on your own without any support from anybody. You're doing amazing. You know, you're brilliant. And I was like, oh, remember that the next time you hate me because I've cooked tea that you don't like or I'm making you go to school. Do you know what I mean? So, sorry, I'm lots of different tangents. I don't know.
They're all related, actually, definitely.
They're boys. They're young boys. They've got their own stuff going on. They've got hormones going on. They challenge me every single day. But time will tell. Time with those two boys will tell. All I know is that they are really good. You know, they've got really good, kind hearts and souls. And of course, as a parent, and you know, you know, it's not always been easy with their dad. And you know, we haven't always worked together as well as we should have done with regards to the way that we parent the boys. But they know, you know, and this is the thing. You always think, right, all I can do is make sure that I bring them up to be as respectful and, you know, confident in themselves and as resilient as possible. That's hard because my youngest is a lot like me. He's got ADHD. He's got, you know, self-esteem issues,
right.
Attachment issues. And you don't know when they go out in the world, they could get in with the wrong crowd. They could get, you just don't know. And that's terrifying. But even talking about social media, so I have always, and I'm probably going to get shot in the foot for this, but I always have boundaries with my kids, but I've never said to the kids, right, this is the amount of screen time that you've got. Or, right. you know, I've had to do it a little bit with my youngest. You know, I've had to be like, right, I'm taking your phone off you now for whatever reason. Or, you know, when he's not been set, I'm like, right, you know, but nine times out, you know, the majority of the time, sorry, all I've tried to do is have conversations with the kids, talk to them about what's acceptable, how to use social media, because I almost feel like just by putting boundaries in place and not having conversations, things are moving all the time. You know, AI, I mean, I'm talking to my son the other day and we were reading and I was like, can I come and read next to you in bed? Mum was like, yeah, of course you can, get your book. And he used to love books, but now he's got a phone. He wants to read on his phone, you know, which breaks my heart. But it's like it's AI's creating stories for him. You know what I mean? And it's like, my God, you know, all of a sudden things are moving so quick. And I'm not a stupid, you know, I'm not a stupid person. I'm quite a smart person, but I can't keep up to date with what's going on. So I just try to be, you know, as open and honest and have conversation. And I also am honest with my kids about stuff. You know, I talk to them a lot about what I'm trying to do, about work, about, you know, about as much as possible, because that wasn't what it was like. That wasn't my experience growing up.
Right, right. Well, I'm not sure if I should compliment you on your parenting skills, but at the end of the day, I love the healthy ideas your boys are bringing forward. You know, there's always that conversation. You know, it's like, put down your blue screen, go out and get some sunshine, you know, get some different light. You know, that's kind of old school. But I think at the end of the day, what am I trying to say? They seem to be perceptive. And usually kids learn from their parents on how to deal with situations, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Should you blow up? Should you have anxiety? Or should you get very stoic and think it through before you say anything?
Yeah.
And it sounds like your kids are doing that with you. It's like, yeah, Mom's having a good day. Mom's having a bad day.
How to deal with that. I think one of the things as well is that, you know, oh God, you know, don't, because I'm making mistakes all the time, just like everybody, you know. And, you know, if anybody knew me 6 years ago, when I left my husband, my ex-husband, my kids were feral. They were wild. They were, you know, they'd been so traumatized, I think. And I was still massively traumatized. And so, you know, I've had to, the reason I only think I can't, you know, the credit doesn't go down to, because, you know, I would never say, and you know, I struggle with this. I'm lost for words now, I guess, because I struggle with this all the time. I'm constantly like, God, I'm a, you know, because I'm, I, my career is important to me. And, you know, my kids have to go to, not so much now with my oldest, but my oldest, you know, I got called a bad mum recently by my next door neighbor because my 13-year-old son was letting himself in after school. And it's like, my God, he's at secondary school and I'm working. I'm not in a privileged position to be able to be at home every time my kids come home from school,
Right.
nor would I want to be anyway. Sorry, you know, and I've come to terms with that fact. I'm a mom and I love my boys and everything I do is for them, but I'm also was never built to be that mom that just sits at home and irons and knits and you know, I just and there are plenty of people that want to do that, and there are plenty of people that do that amazingly well. I that's not me, but that doesn't mean that my kids are going to be any less, you know, amazing than someone who's had mom at home all the time. But I think for me, what I did learn, and I know this is, you know, we say this all the time, but we don't always do it, is that I've had to put me first. I've had to make myself happy, find happiness in myself and peace within myself, because that's how the kids have found security and been safe.
No, it makes a ton of sense. Not sure where to throw a comment on top of that. Like I said earlier, I think the kids kind of follow your lead. So if you're miserable, they'll be miserable. If you're stressed, they'll be stressed. If you're trying to find your happy place and what makes you go, then they kind of take note and say, "Hey, I'm going to do that. I'm going to figure out myself and I'm going to figure out what makes me go." I know. Yeah, two letter
Absolutely.
words there, but at the end of the day.
Well, you know yourself as a parent. You've got more experience than me.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but at the end of the day, I think that the moral to this last part is the fact that kids are always watching, they're always learning, and you and I are in the same boat. If we're doing coaching, our students are actually teaching us. It's like, okay, I had no idea we're going to go down that tangent, but that's really a good topic. Let's do that.
It's the
And
same
I'll
with
say right now, we got about 3 minutes left on the recording. I think we can keep talking, but it's just going to shut off.
Okay. I think though as well, just to talk about that what you're talking about, always learning and learning from experiences, that's super important in sustainability as well. You know, and inclusion, because things are changing all of the time and we're learning new things all of the time. So it's really, really important that we become lifelong learners and that we are committed to that.
Yeah.
Not just as professionals, but obviously as parents as well. You know, and I think that also links with that passion and enthusiasm. That burns really strongly, I think, within me as a person, I'm sure within you as a person as well.
Yeah, I think I've been told this and I've learned it, on my own. Always be curious and always be moving. Kind of the end of the day, it's like, the moving part is your physical that stimulates your brain, so to speak. But the curiosity is like, I think a lot of people call it never stop learning. And so, that's why I brought up your boys that I think, they are just open sponges waiting to absorb the universe and whatever they can learn. And they'll restructure that and they'll run forward.
I love that thing though. I always say that, you know, curiosity. Approach everything with the curiosity of a, what is it? There's that saying, approach everything with the curiosity of a 5-year-old or whatever. And that's super important when it comes to empathy, because we are so good as humans at not really listening because we're not that curious. We just want to get our point across.
Right. There are days like that, and I've been approached on, been on the receiving end of that, and I'll call it my defense mechanism. I'll just smile when they just go ballistic, and it's like, "You've got a question. You're telling me what I should know, and it's like, but there's something you don't know, and you've got a question.
Yeah.
And it diffuses the situation, but that's just me. But it's just amazing when you get them talking about what's going on. It's like, okay, now we're having a conversation. You're not mad at me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got over it now.
Exactly. So I'm not sure how to wrap this up, but at the end of the day, I really enjoyed talking to you, Rebecca. I think towards the end of the week, we'll go ahead and get this published out. You can use the, you know, the video clips and, you know, the audio where you...
This is a Courage to Rise production. I am your host, David Kahneman. Audio is engineered by Audacity. You can find video on YouTube where the guest permissions are granted. Different music per episode are copyrighted by Arnett Howard, Boomshank, Max Marcello, Tears for Fears, Bruce Springsteen, Naomi, and Sammy Ray and Friends. Continue your journey and join us next time to be curious.